Good morning. It's good to see all of you here this morning. Kind of brightens up a dreary morning, although it looks like it's getting sunnier outside, which is good for the afternoon. I have been doing something over the last 2 months that I wanted to share with you to begin this morning. Every Tuesday night, from about 7:30 to 8:30, I go down to the Friends, the Quaker Meeting House, that's kind of close to downtown Des Moines there, on 42nd and Grand. And what happens there over the course of that hour is a group meditation that anybody in the community is welcome to attend. So you show up a few minutes before 7:30 and you enter the meeting space in there, and it's very peaceful and dimly lit. And you take off your shoes and you turn off your phone and you sit down and you sit quietly, silently for an hour. And all that you do during that time is breathe. And if you can do it, and I've learned over the course of these last 2 months that this is really hard, but you sit there and you try to be aware of your breath, each and every breath. And as you do this, you can hope to quiet your mind. And I didn't realize until I started doing this this exercise how easily our minds wander. They're constantly thinking, and our minds are meant to do that. But oftentimes our thoughts can kind of get away from us. We can start dwelling on our past, going over things that even happened that day, but maybe even years ago, worries, anxieties, just things we're dwelling about. Or our minds can race toward the future, and we can start thinking about what we're doing the next week or the next month, and before you know it, we are not living in the present. Meditation is an exercise that has helped me to quiet my mind a little bit and focus in on the present moment, to live just a little bit more in the present, to focus on what's in front of me and being aware of my breathing. Closing my eyes and being aware of my breathing in that context has helped me to do that, to let go a little bit of the past, to rest a little bit in the future that we have with God that gives us peace, and to live in the present moment. So over the course of these past 2 months, as I've been doing this each week, I've been thinking a lot about what it means to breathe, something that we do that we may in some ways kind of take for granted or not think much about. At the very beginning of the Hebrew Bible, at the very beginning of the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, the story tells us that a wind of God swept over the waters. And from that wind, the wheels of creation were set in motion. Light and darkness, earth and sky, green plants and fruit, sun and moon, animals and humankind, all of creation originating from the same source, the wind of God. The wind of God is actually an English translation of the Hebrew word ruach. Now, for the Hebrews, the word ruach had multiple interchangeable meanings: wind, spirit, and breath. Ruach is what gives life, what stirs creation. Each breath that we take is an opportunity to be reminded of the eternal breath of God, our creator, sustainer, and redeemer. And when life feels overwhelming, when the bad news is piling up, when our worries take up all the space in our minds, and the tension builds as it does in our bodies, our minds and our bodies are connected, we can return our awareness simply to our breath. We can breathe deeply and remember that this breath can be traced all the way back to the breath of God that gave us life and continues to give us life each moment on this earth. And I find that very comforting when life feels a little overwhelming. Now, our passage this morning from Isaiah was a breath of fresh air to the Hebrew people. The context in which this passage was written was in exile. The people were in exile to the neighboring empire. And the prophet comforts the people. The prophet reminds the people of God's presence with them in the past by referencing the Exodus story, the liberation from the empire of Egypt. But also, the prophet tells the people of God's promises for the future, that God will make a river in the desert, that liberation is also to come for them. And what this does, by reminding them of the past and referring to the future that is to come, it shifts the awareness of the people in the present moment from a place of hopelessness to hope. God pulled them through it before, and God will do it again. And that reframes the situation that they are in and gives a new shade of light to the present moment. And so, speaking on behalf of God, the prophet says, I am about to do a new thing, but do you not perceive it? And that's kind of the turning point of the passage, right in the middle, in the present moment. And it's the key question. Do you not perceive it? Do you not perceive the new thing that God is doing right now? The prophets of Israel, like Isaiah, Jeremiah, Amos, and Micah, played a special role among the people. They were not like the priests who performed the religious rituals and more or less kept their hands on the status quo. The prophets were truth tellers. In a way, the prophets were like these oracles who communicated the voice of God to the people. And at times, the prophets took a critical tone, and that's kind of what we know them for. They called the people out for failing to take care of the poor, the widows, the strangers in their midst. The prophets reminded the people that honoring God meant worshiping faithfully and seeking justice, doing both of those things. The prophets were always more critical of the people when they were living safely at home than when they were in exile, because when they were at home, they often became too comfortable with the status quo. Now, the prophets like Isaiah in our passages today would shift tones when the people were in exile and at the mercy of a neighboring and hostile empire. And in these times, the prophets would offer these messages of comfort and hope. In either scenario, whether at home or in exile, the prophets sought to tell the truth to the people about the present moment. The prophets listened for God's voice. The prophets perceived God's activity in the moment and communicated this to the people. And echoing Jesus' words in Matthew 13, the prophets were people with ears to hear and eyes to see the divine movement boiling beneath the surface of the day-to-day, even when that day-to-day was not good. The prophets were the ones who saw where the wind of God was blowing before anyone else. They could perceive what the breath of God was creating next before anyone else could do it. And they felt the divine ruach in their midst before anybody else could feel it. So when the people were discouraged and defeated in exile, Isaiah saw that God would liberate them soon. And even though there was a vast desert between the people in exile and their home, literally and figuratively, the prophets would tell them that God would soon make a river in the desert. God would make a way where there was no way. The prophets held up hope. when there were no signs of hope in the present moment. They dared the people to hold on to hope. Who are the prophets in our lives? Take a second to think about who the prophets are in your life. Who are the people that help you hold on to hope? As I thought about that question and reflected on it this week, I thought of some people. One person that came immediately to mind for me was my grandma, my Nana, as we call her in my family. Every time that Amy and I and Levi get a chance to go back to Pennsylvania, we make it a point to go visit her and spend some time with her in her nursing facility. And despite all of the ways that her body has failed her as she has aged, she still carries with her signature sharp wit. She still makes us feel hopeful and just happy after we get a chance to spend some time with her in conversation. I always come away from those visits feeling more hopeful. Another person that might be a prophet for us is Kate Bowler. A lot of us have read her book recently, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I've Loved. We think about the hope that she demonstrates in that book, even as she's facing a significant illness, and the way that she communicates the hope that she has with us as a teacher, and in many ways for us, how to hold on to hope in the midst of a great deal of pain. As I reflected on this question, I also thought about youth, looking at Faraja and Shema right here, and others in our midst, our youth and our children, and their questions, their curiosities, their care for others. They have a lot to teach us. I learn a lot from them. And interacting with them, seeing them, their presence with us, gives me hope for our future. Now, like the Hebrew people during the time Isaiah wrote our passage, I think it's easy for us to be discouraged and overwhelmed and even hopeless when we look at the difference between the world as it is and the world that we know it could be, the way we dream it could be. And it feels, at least to me, and I know many of you feel this way too, it feels like there can be a vast desert between our present moment and the future that we hope for. And on this fifth Sunday of Lent, we are walking in the foothills of Easter, and the fog is thickening, and the darkness is coming upon us, and each step forward carries the weight of uncertainty, even dread, because we know what is about to happen when Jesus rides that humble donkey into Jerusalem. Prophets always spoke about hope during the most hopeless of times, when it all felt like it would be lost. Hope against hope. Hope rising from the ashes of hopelessness. That's Easter hope. This is not a hope that is based only in our human capacity to overcome the powers of sin and death. No, it is hope rooted in our faith that we worship a living God. God who is still breathing. God who brings light out of darkness, who makes rivers in the desert, finds life in the places of death, God who is about to do a new thing in this world and among us. May it be so. Amen.